Hi, everyone. This is Olivia and Stephanie from the True Crime Society podcast. We want to invite you to listen to a special preview of a brand new true crime podcast that I will be hosting. We think you'll really enjoy it. The podcast is called Below the Surface from Abjack Entertainment, the team that brought you DNA ID, campus killings, missing persons, the murder in my family, and more.
In every episode of Below the Surface, you'll hear about a new fascinating case with one common theme, a water connection. In this preview of episode one, you'll hear about the mysterious case of Kim Wall, a journalist who went for a ride as a guest on a submarine and was never seen again. You can listen to episode one, Kim Wall, in its entirety right now. Just search for Below the Surface on your favorite podcast player or app. If you like the show, you can also listen to episode two, which is out now. We'll include the links and info for Below the Surface in our show notes. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for checking out this special preview of Below the Surface, the new podcast from Abjack Entertainment that brings you fascinating cases with a water connection. I'm your host, Olivia. I'd like to play this short preview for you of episode one. Today, I'll be unpacking the case of journalist Kim Wall. Best known for her articles in The Guardian, The New York Times, and Vice, the journalist disappeared in a submarine beneath the Oresund Strait after interviewing inventor Peter Madsen on August 10, 2017. We can only speculate what exactly happened below the surface, but upon the submarine's resurface, Kim was missing and Peter Madsen was not. To listen to the full episode, search for Below the Surface on your favourite podcast app. You'll also be able to check out episode two, which is out now as well. Be sure to subscribe to Below the Surface so that you don't miss a single episode. Thank you for listening. Let's dive in. Born in 1987, Kim Wall grew up with her parents and her older brother Tom in the tiny town of Trelleborg in the south of Sweden. Her parents Ingrid and Joachim were both journalists, Ingrid in finance and economics and Joachim in photography. Their children's lives were filled with newspapers every morning as the family ate breakfast. Kim often accompanied her mother to interviews and assignments as a child, so nobody in the family was surprised when Kim announced that she wanted to be a journalist someday too. But not the kind that her parents were. She wanted to go places and write stories about the people nobody else bothered to pose questions to. As a teenager, Kim's family and friends described her as extremely driven and very impressive. Nothing stopped her, and even after she met her goals, she simply moved on to new ones. She never took time to sit on her laurels. After high school, Kim studied at the London School of Economics before getting her master's from the prestigious School of Journalism at Columbia University, where she graduated with honours at the top of her class. In the years after Kim obtained her master's, finding work with a particular network or company proved almost impossible, as most reporting networks were no longer hiring full-time journalists. Instead, these companies searched for freelancers who had already written articles and paid them for their rights to publish their stories. While this wasn't the most financially stable life, it worked for Kim. She went on to freelance for some of the world's most popular media outlets, including Vice, The Guardian, The New York Times, and even the South China Morning Post. One of her friends later told the BBC, what made her journalistic ability so exceptional was that she looked for quirky stories but with a bigger narrative. Most of the stories Kim focused on circled around subcultures, gender, and issues in social justice. While her interests were vast and she travelled frequently and wrote about her experiences in other countries, her stories were always incredibly topical and allowed her audience to see a deeper message beyond the reporting. She was particularly skilled at digging deeply into her interviews and she never lost the humanity of her subjects. The more she wrote, the more she travelled. By the age of 30, Kim had literally traversed the globe, interviewing everyone from voodoo priests in Haiti to individuals identifying as vampires and gang members of China's Tamil Tigers. She was quick-witted, street smart, and always prepared. Her friend Katerina recalled Kim explaining that she carried a photo of her and her parents in her wallet when she travelled. This wasn't because of any kind of emotional connection, but as a security measure in case she got kidnapped. Katerina explained that's just who Kim was. She was never afraid, always aware, and never reckless. She'd interview anyone, but was always able to keep charge of the situation with her Swedish bluntness and her carefully placed decisions. It's how she got reclusive and shy people to talk to her. It was also how she'd won a fellowship with the International Women's Media Foundation to report on Uganda and Sri Lanka. She'd also landed a commission to write a feature article for Harper's Magazine. But the world was not enough for Kim. There was always another story to be told. So in 2017, when she walked past a warehouse in Copenhagen belonging to the Rocket Madsen Science Lab, she saw a potential story. Kim had no idea that this would be the last story she would ever tell. In August of 2017, Kim and her partner, Danish designer Ulla Stobie, were packing up their apartment to move to Beijing in China. After almost a decade of travelling the world and living in places for less than 3 months, Kim and Ulla had decided to settle permanently in Beijing to build a life together. But as they walked through their Danish neighbourhood a few months before their departure date, Kim noticed a warehouse that had escaped her previous notice. On the side of the building, Rocket Madsen Space Lab was painted in large letters. Some cursory research informed her that RMS Labs, as it was more commonly known, was a company for do-it-yourself rocket and submarine projects. Its founder, Peter Madsen, who was often referred to as the Danish Elon Musk, was kind of a celebrity in Denmark. He was a self-proclaimed inventrepreneur who focused his engineering skills on ocean exploration and space travel. In 2008, he made headlines by inventing and building his own submarine called the UC-3 Nautilus. Peter was very keen on public interviews surrounding his inventions, especially after going on to partner with former NASA contractor Christian von Bengsten. Together they formed Copenhagen Suborbitals, which they described as a collective of amateur rocket makers funded by donations and working with the aim of launching a manned rocket into space. Despite the co-op dismantling in 2014 due to disagreements between Madsen and his fellow engineers, Madsen went on to create his own company, RMS Labs. Kim was enamoured with Madsen's story. His world was so removed from that of most people, getting his take on submarines and rockets was exactly the kind of article Kim would be able to pitch to a media outlet. But for all that Peter Madsen liked the press, he was a difficult man to get an exclusive interview from. It took Kim several months before she was able to schedule an interview with Peter, but on August 10, 2017, only a few days before she was due to leave Copenhagen for good, Madsen finally agreed to not only give her an interview, but a ride on his famous submarine. Kim was ecstatic to get such an opportunity, and Ulla walked her down to the dockyard at around 7 p.m. She shook hands with Madsen and boarded the Nautilus. Ulla snapped a photo of Kim waving from the top deck, and then he went home to get ready for the going-away party that the couple were throwing to say goodbye to their Danish friends. Kim's interview was only supposed to take around 2 hours, and then she said she'd join Ulla at the party. By the time Ulla returned to their apartment, Kim had texted him, "I'm still alive, by the way, but I'm going down now. I love you." He, as she meant Peter Madsen, bought coffee and cookies, though. Ulla texted her back and went to prepare for the party. By the 2 hour mark, Ulla expected to hear that Kim was coming home, but his phone remained silent. He texted her for an update and he got no response. By midnight, Kim hadn't returned and Ulla and their party guests were getting increasingly worried that something had gone wrong with the submarine. When there had been no word from Kim by 1:45 a.m, Ulla contacted the police to report Kim missing. Authorities and harbour staff were contacted to locate the Nautilus, but since the sub had no satellite tracking, nobody could get in contact with Madsen to find out if something had gone wrong. Local police and the harbour staff watched the water all night for any sign of the submarine, but the waters remained empty. At least until 10:30 a.m. the next morning, the Drought and Lighthouse off Koha Bay reported that the Nautilus had been spotted. Something was definitely wrong with it, though. As rescue helicopters tried to get in contact, as the sub resurfaced, Peter Madsen blew through the top hatch, waving frantically at nearby fishing boats. 4 fishermen were able to pull Madsen to safety, but he was alone. There was no sign of Kim Wall. The fishermen sailed Madsen into Drow Port, where both police and the media were waiting for him. Madsen was immediately arrested for Kim's disappearance, and the Nautilus was resurfaced and searched by investigators. They were hoping against hope that Kim was still on board somewhere, but the sub was empty. There was nobody else on board. Only Madsen knew the truth about Kim. Could they get him to tell it?